This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about the lasting impact of the Vietnam War, which ended 50 years ago. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. In 1965, Don Super's life was good.
At 18, I was about to graduate from high school, and I had about a 3.94 grade point average, and I played first chair clarinet in the band and the orchestra, and I pretty much considered myself, as others did, a nerd.
He was living in Idaho and spent lots of time outdoors.
Horseback riding on the weekends, and during the summer, every weekend camping and fishing. And in the fall, I was always going out with my father on elk and deer hunting trips.
Don got a full scholarship to the University of Nevada to study music, but he didn't like it. He transferred to another school to study engineering, but he didn't like that either. He took some time off and got a job in his hometown. At the time, the war in Vietnam was escalating, and Don realized that because he wasn't in school, he could be drafted.
And I had talked to my selective service unit at the county, and they said that I was to be drafted on my birthday in April.
Instead, Don enrolled in a tech school, but he hated it and he quit after a year, even though he knew it meant that he would be drafted. So he did what he thought was his best option, joined the war effort on his own terms.
And so I enlisted, I believe, on the 28th day of March, 1968, in the U.S. Army Security Agency. They had a series of aptitude tests that you took there while you were with the recruiter. After I'd completed those, the recruiter said that I had scored 100% in linguistics and probably could be pretty good at learning foreign languages.
He was given several choices for languages to learn, one of them Lao.
Laos is close to Vietnam. It's like a next-door neighbor. Maybe if I'm stationed there, I'll be able to figure out what's actually going on in South Vietnam. So I chose the Lao language.
Don headed off to language school at Fort Myer in Virginia, and it was demanding.
There was a tall Laotian French individual named Suksambun Sanyasitsena, and he came into class, and the first thing he said was, is there will be absolutely no English spoken in this class at any time. And he gave us about three Lao phrases. Vau dam coi de, and that meant say with me. He would say ba tuk, that's wrong, that's incorrect. And he would say vau ik, which is say it again.
After 11 months of this intensive training, Don and one of his classmates were given orders, an assignment in Thailand, near a city called Udon Thani, about 30 miles south of the Laos border.
I think both of us thought we must be being sent there for some reason to help the Lao people.
Because Laos was considered neutral territory during the Vietnam War.
And we knew that we both had top secret cryptologic clearances at the time, so whatever it was going to be pretty secret.
After completing his language training, Don found himself stationed in Thailand near the Laos border, part of a secret mission, a mission he didn't initially understand, and one that took him decades to come to terms with. Nicole Curry picks up the story from here.
It was 1969 when Don got to Thailand. He was assigned to Ramasun Station. Ramasun was an intelligence unit flying under the radar as a radio research facility. And it was on day one that Don finally learned the extent of this mission, to assist the CIA in a secret bombing campaign. It was called Operation Barrel Roll. The main goal was to disrupt the North Vietnamese supply route that ran through Laos. They were also there to support anti-communist forces in the area. This is how it worked. The first set of people intercepted radio messages from communist groups. The second decoded these messages, which were often delivered in Morse code. The third group, where Don was, had to translate the messages into English. The messages were often coordinates, and they were supposed to be locations where communist soldiers were meeting or taking supplies. Don delivered these coordinates to different clients within the U.S. Armed Forces and their allies. Maybe a day later or so, planes would drop bombs over those coordinates. Most were cluster munitions.
We thought we were doing a good thing. We thought we were helping the Lao government not turn into a communist country. We thought we were doing the right thing by aiding the different armies to turn back the North Vietnamese and the communist Pathet Lao. And the other thing was, is if we had civilians or schools or temples identified, we were to give that information to another client and assume that that was to protect them.
Civilians were protected under the Geneva Convention Treaty.
But I suppose it was 5 months into it when I finally started putting together that this was quite a carpet bombing campaign. And one day, just after Christmas, there was a coordinate listed and a body count of 182. And for some reason, I remembered that coordinate that stuck in my mind. And so I went back through the files and discovered that about the 24th day of December, that I had identified a school. And then a few days later, I get a report back from collateral information that those coordinates were bombed and that we had killed about 182 individuals. And so that, I think, was my first indication is the schools are not being protected. And it seemed fairly obvious then that neither would temples or hospitals or civilian populations. And I was guilt-ridden, knowing that I was participating in something that shouldn't be happening. And I just kind of went, I'm not going to do this anymore, and just started rat-holing those messages or throwing them in a burn bag.
So that those locations wouldn't be bombed.
At that point, it didn't matter to me what happened after that.
Don did this for a few weeks, until one day, a sergeant asked to speak with him. The two met in a hallway. The sergeant had become aware of what Don was doing, and things got heated. Don doesn't like to get into the details of this moment because it's not a good memory, but he left the conversation feeling a mix of emotions, all negative.
Anger, morally violated, and basically, like I didn't have any choice.
After 1 year, Don finished his tour of duty and moved to Washington State. He later started a career in horsemanship. The bombing remained a secret to the U.S. public. It wasn't until 1971 that the Pentagon Papers leaked information about it. It wasn't until 2 years later that the bombing actually ceased. But for 47 years, Don didn't tell a soul about his own role, the secret mission, the coordinates, until he met John Jones.
Don is someone who really relishes in the art of horsemanship. And he dresses like a cowboy. He wears his big belt buckle and his long belt. A lot of times wears a cowboy hat.
John hired Don in 2017 to supply horses for a series of camping trips for youth in Washington State. One night around the campfire, John mentioned he was a Vietnam veteran.
And so he was curious about what I had done. And so I went ahead and I shared my story.
John was stationed in Vietnam with an infantry unit along the Cambodian border. He listened for communist soldiers. Sometimes he heard them had to face them, and he sustained serious injuries.
And so I told Don, and he was kind of quiet listening.
It was an overwhelming feeling to know that this individual had been one of the wounded, and he'd lost an eye, and sometime during the deal, evidently his lungs had been compromised, and so he was disabled by the deal. And I think I felt I didn't have any physical injuries, but I felt finally it's like, well, I'm going to share my story with him. It's out here in the middle of nowhere, and nobody's going to overhear it. And this is an opportunity to finally expose myself.
And so I was pretty amazed. And then I told him, well, you know, if you ever want to go back, I'd go back with you.
John had already gone back to the place where he had served. He met face to face with his former adversaries. John was also part of a group, Fellowship of Reconciliation. They helped veterans who wanted to make a positive change.
I don't think a lot of veterans go back and see the side of the war that they were fighting against. They go back to the areas that they were soldiers. I went back to visit the folks I was fighting against. And Don was curious about that. It didn't happen right away. You know, I think it was, geez, at least almost 2 years. He came to me and he says, it's time to go. And I said, okay.
In 2019, Don and John made a trip to Laos.
I was nervous, for sure. John and I had agreed that we would make every effort to appear just as a couple of tourists. One of our first stops was we stopped at the Cope Visitor Center, where they share a history of the bombing. As it turns out, we dropped 1 ton of munitions on every man, woman, and child that was in residence in Laos at the time.
With that in mind, Don and John headed to their next stop, the Plain of Jars. It's an archaeological site that spans about 2,000 miles. Back at Ramesun Station, Don wrote this coordinate down a lot.
And on the flight up, we could look out the window. The closer we got to the Plain of Jars, the land looked like it had smallpox.
Scattered across the region are huge stone jars, some weighing up to 14 tons. And now, next to these jars were bomb craters.
And they were 30 foot to 50 foot in diameter, and probably, we discovered later, anywhere between 8 and 12 feet deep.
Once they landed, they found a few museums in the area.
And visiting the museums and seeing the actual pictures, you know, they're museums. They don't hide it. They put the actual pictures of the devastation and the bodies and everything.
I was appalled. I was ashamed.
The bombing was so bad that people lived in caves for 9 years. In one of the museums, Don learned about a very violent incident.
On the 24th day of November, 1968, I was still in language school, so I had no direct responsibility for this, but an F-4 fighter jet put a rocket in the cave entrance, and it killed 374 doctors, nurses, patients, and villagers immediately. I saw a couple of pictures in the museum, and I left. John stayed back and looked at it, but I couldn't even be in the museum at the time.
And after seeing the history, they heard the stories.
A lot of these villagers had no clue what was going on. You know, they were fairly indigenous Hmong people. They thought like the gods were angry that the sky was on fire and everything was rumbling and exploding. They had no clue it was, you know, American bombs.
The two stayed in Laos for about a month. John made a video about their trip and posted it on YouTube. Two organizations, Legacies of War and Aqua Survey, reached out to them. Both had some part in helping the people in Laos and helping to clean up unexploded bombs that were still scattered over the landscape and posed a deadly risk. And Don wanted to lend a hand. Soon, he was back in Laos helping with different projects. Over the next 6 years, they raised money to install a pipe in order to tap a spring for villagers whose water had been contaminated with Agent Orange. They bought eyeglasses for veterans whose eyes had been damaged during the war. They opened schools and much more. But no matter what he did, Don's guilt gnawed at him. He tried to make things right, but nothing could really change the past. So in 2023, he tried something different. He went to a temple in Laos.
I went there and explained to the monk who I was and what my participation had been in the secret war, and that I was very troubled by it, and that I had discovered that shame and guilt had made a great motivator, and that I was back now trying to do what I could to help the Lao people. And I was having a lot of trouble feeling forgiveness, although nearly everybody I met or talked to felt very forgiving. The monk explained, the past is gone. There's nothing that you'll ever be able to do about that. It's over, and that the only thing you really have is today. And he commended me as being determined to do that, is just every single day try to do something good. That may help you balance the scale from bad karma to good karma, but that's the only thing that you really have control over.
It sort of felt like closure, but it still felt like something was missing. 2 days later, Don got a call. The organization, Aqua Survey, told him that a Laotian veteran wanted to talk to him. His name was Pimpo Ponyavong. Pimpo ran a radio communication center at a communist complex during the war. This would be one of the first times Don would come face to face with the former opponent.
It was strange, and he would basically not even make eye contact. We sat opposite each other in some easy chairs, and I shared what I had done, how badly I felt about it, and that I was back doing now what I could to help in Laos. And then he related his story. And I think it was the first time that he had ever had the opportunity to tell somebody from the other side his understanding of the war. And why did you come over here and try to kill all of us? And that was the first time that I had ever had somebody that hadn't acted like they had forgiven me.
And Don realized this was exactly what he needed.
I was like, I'm in 100% agreement. And as far as why did we come here and try to kill all you, I've struggled with to find an answer to that myself. For 50 years, it has evaded me. I have no idea. In the end, he said, well, I'll forgive you. He said, you're just a simple folk. And the trouble came from the U.S. government. And he got up and we shook hands and hugged each other. And I've been looking for that. I thought I was entitled to an ass-chewing. and he delivered it.
That story was reported by Nicole Curry.